welcome today. Let us listen now to the reading from Luke 2, 1 to 11. Reading is taken from the New Living Translation, followed by Tim with his message, Sounds Like Christmas.
At that time, the Roman Emperor Augustus decreed that a census should be taken throughout the Roman Empire. This was the first census since when Quirinius was governor of Syria. All returned to their own ancestral towns to register for this census. And because Joseph was a descendant of King David, he had to go to Bethlehem in Judea, David's ancient home. He traveled there from the village of Nazareth in Galilee. He took with him Mary, to whom he was engaged, who was now expecting a child. And while they were there, the time came for her baby to be born. She gave birth to her firstborn son. She wrapped him snugly in strips of cloth, laid him in a manger because there was no lodging available for them. That night, there were shepherds staying in the fields nearby, guarding their flocks of sheep. Suddenly, an angel of the Lord appeared among them, and the radiance of the Lord's glory surrounded them. They were terrified, but the angel reassured them. "Don't be afraid," he said. "I bring you good news that will bring great joy to all. The Saviour, yes, the Messiah, the Lord, has been born today in Bethlehem, the city of David." Thanks be to God.
Well, good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning. Christmas is coming, ready or not? Are you ready? You've got a Christmas tree out there. People have been working hard, putting up decorations. There's even, I don't know where this came from. Someone might have to own up to it afterwards. An almost life-size Jesus, Mary and Jesus. Sorry, Joseph, Mary and Jesus out there. Can you see them? Just turn around.
Kathleen.
Kathleen. thank you, Kathy. For that, I'm going to talk a little bit about that later on. But if you go out and study Jesus, this is a very strange looking baby. Very strange looking baby. But so it sounds like Christmas. We're going to be starting on, well, the next four Sundays of Advent leading up to Christmas Day, and also our outdoor Christmas celebration. Our, what do we call that? Carols by candlelight. Carols by candlelight. They'll be non-flammable candlelight just for occupational health and safety purposes. So don't be afraid of the flame. There won't be any. They'll be just lovely light shining forward. Alrighty, so Karen's given me the wind-up already. I've only been up here 30 seconds. Get it moving. Okay, so 5 weeks, a holy night, away in a manger, O come all you faithful, O come Emmanuel, born is the King, which you heard when we played for the offering and joy to the world. Carols, so good to be able to sing carols, isn't it, this time of year. When we had the launch of the Kmart wishing tree, we stood for 15 minutes outside Kmart singing carols. And carols are fantastic because they talk about Jesus. That is what they do. They proclaim Jesus. How good is that to be able to stand in the middle of a shopping centre and sing about Jesus? And we are going to be able to do that at Karramundi. We're going to do that on our property here. Now, I have had a bit of a hang-up between a Christmas song and a Christmas carol. Now, you'll be glad to know that I'm over that now. But just for your reference, I define as, this is my personal definition, you probably won't find this anywhere else. A Christmas song, in my opinion, has Santa, reindeer, snow, snowmen, or ways to travel in wintry conditions. That is a definition of a winter song for me. But if it's about Jesus, it's a carol. So we look forward to unpacking and examining those carols over the next couple of weeks. Why do we sing carols at Christmas time? We sing in response to the expectation, the coming of Christ our King, who came because God loved us so much. In response to that, we sing carols of praise to him. How good that will be. So the first one, O Holy Night, O Holy Night. And he sung it so lovely. It was beautiful. Now, I didn't get the full impact here because I had the bass blurring away in my ear. But I could tell that you enjoyed it. You really did enjoy it. Now, and I think that you did yourselves proud. Even compared to that, the professional production that we saw at the beginning, I think you guys did a lot better. He really sang from the heart. So where did this carol come from? It was written by a guy named Placide Kapow. Now, that's probably not how you pronounce it. He was French. My French is not so good. But that helps me remember that his name was Kapow because when he was about 8, his friend shot his hand off. I know. If you look carefully at this up here, you'll see that he has no hand. Now, his dad was a barrel maker, and Placide probably would have become a barrel maker also, but because of the unfortunate accident, the friend's, Placide's friend's father paid or helped pay for his tuition. So he went to a slightly better school. He ended up studying and becoming a lawyer, became a learned man, and became quite a poet. And he was a wine merchant, and he would travel around. And the local parish priest said to Placide, I've read some of your poems, they're really good. Can you please write a Christmas poem for us? And he did. Now, it is called, again, French bad, Minuit Chrétiens, which means Midnight Christian. And it was set to music by Adolphe Adam. Lovely, stirring tune. He described it as the Christian Marseillaise. That's how much he felt it was stirring when people sang that song. But the church of the day decided that was going falling out of favour because Placide has a few political views that they didn't really like with, so they tried to squash it. But it had spread, it had gone international. And in 1855, John Dwight, there he is, I think he was a congregational minister, he translated it into English. And that's the version that we sing today. Now, it's very interesting that the timing of the song, the stirring melody, but also the stirring words, coincided, the translation, with the Civil War. And during the Civil War, the North versus the South, this song became a rallying cry. Because it was about equality, it was about freedom, and especially the third verse, which you've just sang. Chains shall he break, for the slave is our brother, and in his name all oppression shall cease. Can you see why the people of the North took to this song and took to the melody? Because that's what they're all about. They're about freedom. And that's what we're all about too. We're all about freedom. Freedom for the slavery that we have ourselves. Not the same sort of slavery as they experienced back then, but we can find ourselves in a different sort of slavery in our lives. But Jesus is all about breaking the chains. He's all about freedom in his name and oppression ceasing. Now, a holy night. Sometimes nights aren't so holy though. Sometimes they're not as holy as we think that they could be. I remember one time, this happened last year, it was time to set up the Christmas tree. Now, we have a tradition in the Clark House where we set it up on November 25th. I might have told you about that, or Karen told you about that. So it came to time to set up the Christmas tree. So I went up on the roof. That's where we kept our Christmas tree. And I found that, I remembered, I'd used the Christmas tree for alternate purposes. Because we have two whirlybirds in our roof. This is in our house in Zilmere. And they were a little bit dysfunctional. So at some stage during the year, I'd gone off. Close your ears, Bruce. You don't want to hear this. At some stage, I'd gone off into the roof and thought, I don't know how to fix this. I put a little bit of grease on it. It didn't work. So I got some branches from the Christmas tree, and I'd shoved them into the whirlybird. Problem solved. Very good. But Christmas time came. And I went downstairs with the Christmas tree, took the branches out, put the tree up. And look, it was beautiful. There we are. That's the Clarks last year. Very good. Christmas tree intact. But that week, a big wind came into Brisbane, and there was actually a dust storm. And in our roof, the whirlybirds decided that they were going to start again. They hadn't been going for a long time. They were all very dysfunctional. Now, one of them sounded like a jet engine just starting up outside your house. It's like a vroom, 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 vroom sort of sound. The other one sounded like someone was strangling a small animal on the roof. It was like a So throughout the night, as the wind picked up, it alternated between boom, 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 and boom, boom. It was not a holy night at all. Karen mentioned to me in the morning that if I didn't do something about it, then, you know, she was going to have to stay in a motel. But I did. I went up in the middle of the night, about 2 o'clock. I hopped up, got the ladder out, and I made sure that those whirly birds didn't whirl anymore. I did fix them later on. But sometimes the nights that we have, they're a bit like that. And I wonder, that first Christmas night, what it would have really been like. Now, this is the scene that we sometimes get. It's a bit like those ceramic guys out there. You've got a lovely Jesus in the middle. There he is. He's a... I don't know what his hands are doing, but he's got, look at his hair there. He looks like he's about 35 years old, this Jesus, by his hairstyle there. I'm really not sure what's going on. Mary looks like she's just stepped out of a salon, not like she's just given birth. This shepherd with his little flute thing going on, the donkey staring at Jesus, and I love the cow. He's just giving us a look right down the barrel, saying, I'm here, look out for me. But that's really not what it was like at all. Can you imagine? Can you imagine what it would have been like for that young couple? They journeyed, they had a long, harrowing journey. Mary, a teenager, Joseph, probably not much older, and they'd ended up at Bethlehem. But no room, no relatives to take them in, and they're shoved out the back somewhere in a stable or a cave. We're not really sure. And then without any help, without any friends, without any relatives, without a midwife, without any medicine, without a doctor, Mary gave birth to Jesus and probably cried and howled and screamed through the night. It probably wasn't a holy night as far as Mary is concerned. But in the morning, it was a new and glorious morning. And to add insult to injury, at some stage, a whole lot of crazy shepherds rocked up with their flutes and their lambs and told them a weird story about some angels. So I don't know how that fit in. But at the end of that reading, we didn't get to that part. But in Luke chapter 2, verse 19, it says at the end of the story, if I can find it. But Mary kept all these things in her heart. Mary kept all these things in her heart and thought about them often. I bet she did. I bet she thought about them often. Now I want to focus on these two lines from our holy night. A thrill of hope. The weary world rejoices, for yonder breaks a new and glorious morn. Because often we face a weary night, a weary, unholy night. And even when we wake in the morning, we wake to a tired day. And we go out into a world that is weary and angry, that needs Jesus, and we don't get that thrill of hope. We don't rejoice. We don't feel like a new and glorious morn has come. But it has. Jesus has come. And in the morning for Mary and Joseph, that new day with Jesus made all the difference. And each new day with Jesus makes all the difference. In our world, back then, and in our world right now. And to help us do that, I'm going to go to Lamentations. And the reason I'm going to do that is because we sometimes feel like the people of Israel when we lament. And you're in that weary, sad, unhappy place, that unholy night part of your life, it can feel like you don't know where God is. But I want to assure you today that each new day with Jesus makes a difference. Each new day can give you the help that you're seeking. And each new day with Jesus can give you the hope to keep you going. Now, the people of Israel, they had been doing the wrong thing, and God had sent prophets to warn them, but eventually the Babylonians had come and taken them away. And they were lamenting. They think Jeremiah wrote Lamentations. And for the first 2.5 chapters, it is just woe after woe after woe. It is actually amazing how creative he can complain. It's fascinating the different ways that he can say that things are bad, God, where are you? And about halfway through chapter 3, he says, I remember my affliction and my wandering, the bitterness and the gall. I remember them, and my soul is downcast within me. And then, in the middle of Lamentations, there is that marvellous verse that Karen read to us. Those verses of light, those verses of hope. Yet this I call to mind, says Jeremiah, and therefore I have hope. Therefore I can look forward with expectation of something better to come. Because of the Lord's great love, we are not consumed. For his compassions never fail. They are new every morning. Great is your faithfulness. This is the God we serve. A God who, despite what our circumstances would tell us, compassions never fail. And every morning, his mercy and his grace and his faithfulness is there for us. Now, Paul said a similar thing in 2 Corinthians 4, verse 8. Because he experienced circumstances that, for most people, would have been overwhelming. But this is how he expressed it. He said, we are pressed on every side by troubles. Pressed on every side by troubles, but we are not crushed. We are perplexed, but not driven to despair. We are hunted down, but never abandoned by God. We get knocked down, but we are not destroyed. And that is how Jeremiah felt. It felt like the circumstances might say that it's time to lament. But he knew that in the morning, every morning, God's faithfulness would come through. Every morning, God's great love would mean that they are not consumed and that they would experience God's compassion. Now, that word there, this word here translated as great love, the word in the Hebrew is hesed. Hesed. Can you say that with me? Hesed. Now, different translations translate that differently. That makes sense. Because it's a very difficult word to try and understand. In the King James, they actually made up a word that didn't exist before. You'll find that it says loving kindness. They joined those two words together because they couldn't really find a word that translated the word hesed. Steadfast love, great love, covenant loyalty. It's about God's love, but it's more than that, because love is not just a feeling with hesed. It's love in action. It's God's covenant promises come true. It's about God's grace. It's about God's favour bestowed upon these people. And Jeremiah, he hung on to the fact that it was God's great love, his hesed, that was going to make all the difference, regardless of the circumstances that he was in. And it's the same with us. We can hold on to the hope that it's God's hesed love for us, his great love for us, that will make all the difference. And so we can rejoice. We can have a thrill of hope. And we can have an expectation of a new and glorious morning. So each new day with Jesus, each new day with Jesus, just like that first day, that first morning, that first Christmas morning, it gives you the help that you're seeking and it gives you the hope to keep going. The help that you're seeking. Now, I read something in my devotions through the week by Nicky Gumbel, and he said that regret looks back, and fear looks around, and worry looks in, but faith looks up. And it's when we look up, and it's when we seek God, that we can get the help that we need, when we can experience God's great love. And I'm going to tell you three stories now. Three stories about the difference that a new day with Christ means. And you probably have heard these stories before, so I'm not going to labour on them, but just mention them as we go through. The first one is about Lazarus. Now, you probably know about Lazarus. Lazarus and Mary and Martha were friends of Jesus, and Jesus got the word that Lazarus was sick. They'd sent the word out. They'd sought after Jesus. And Jesus came, but he was late, and Lazarus had died. In fact, he was really late. Lazarus was dead 4 days, and he was filled with compassion. John 11:35, Jesus wept, an outward display of sadness about the occasion. And he went to the tomb, but he knew something that they didn't know. He knew that a new day with him could make all the difference. And he said, roll the stone away. And I think it was Martha said, you know, Jesus, he's been dead for 4 days. It's going to smell a bit. It's how real the Bible is. I mean, like, That's it. King James says that he stinketh. And you know that if you stinketh, it's pretty bad. So they rolled the stone away. And Jesus shouted, Lazarus came out. And he came out alive, stripping off the bandages as he went. Because a new day for Lazarus, a new day with Jesus meant for Lazarus that he was dead, but now he's alive. He was bound up by those cloths, but now he was free. A new day, each new day with Jesus brings help. The help that you're seeking. The second story, which Karen gave us a couple of months ago, I think it was, Zacchaeus. Zacchaeus, tax collector, despised by the population, heard that Jesus was coming into town and sought him out. But not really. He didn't really know what he wanted. And Jesus saw him up the tree and invited himself back to Zacchaeus' house. And they had a conversation. We don't know what the conversation ended up. But Zacchaeus said, I am going to make it right. I'm going to give half my money away to the poor. I'm going to pay back fourfold anybody that I've cheated. And Jesus said, he responded, salvation has come to this house today. Because Jesus said, I've come to seek and save the lost. And a new day with Zacchaeus. If you said, Zacchaeus, what does a new day with Jesus mean for you? He would say, a new day means salvation. A new day means restoration. A new day means the help that I'm seeking. And lastly, Bartimaeus. He was a blind man on the side of the road, and he heard that Jesus was coming along. The rumors had come through. And he called out, Son of David, have mercy on me. And they said, shh, Jesus has got no time for you. Be quiet. Probably said it a bit louder than that, actually, because he was yelling out. But he just got all the louder because he was seeking after something that only Jesus could give. And Jesus called him over and said, what do you need? And he said, I want to see. And Jesus said to him, go, for your faith has healed you. And if you ask Bartimaeus what a difference it makes when you encounter Jesus, a new day with Jesus, he would say, once I was blind, but now I see. Zacchaeus would say, once I was lost, but now I am found. And Lazarus would say, once I was dead, but now I'm alive. This is the difference it makes. And each new day with Jesus makes a difference. Each new day with Jesus gives us the help that we're seeking. And each new day with Jesus also gives us the hope to keep going. Now, I said before that regret looks behind, worry looks in, fear looks around, faith looks up. And when I posted that on Facebook, one of my friends said, faith. He said, hope. Sorry, faith looks up. Hope. Hope looks ahead. I thought, that's good. That is good. Hope of something in the future that we're waiting for, that we're expecting. Now, have you heard of the rule of three? This is a rule that Bear Grylls might have come up with. It's a survival rule. Clearly, I didn't think of it because if I'm, 3 milliseconds outside of comfort, I start to suffer. But this is the rule of three. After about 3 weeks, if you haven't eaten, your body starts to suffer a bit. You're probably suffering quite a bit, actually. After 3 minutes without food, sometimes I'm suffering. But 3 weeks. After 3 days without water, your organs start to really struggle. 3 minutes without air, then your brain starts to suffer as well. But I would suggest to you that only 3 seconds without hope and you really are in trouble. But my question is, what are you hoping for and who is your hope in? What are you hoping for and who are you hoping in? And a new day with Jesus not only gives you the help that you're seeking, but gives you the hope to keep going. Back to Lamentations. The Lord is good to those whose hope is in him, to the one who seeks him. All these men, and we do as well, those three guys in the story, they sought after Jesus and they got the help that they needed. But they also had a hope, an expectation that Jesus would make a difference in his life. And he did. Because Jesus is faithful. God is faithful. His mercies, his compassions are new every morning. That is the God we serve. And it says in Hebrews chapter 10, about the hope that Christians have. Hebrews chapter 10, verse 23. Let us hold tightly without wavering to the hope we affirm, for God can be trusted to keep his promises. Let us hold tightly without wavering to the hope we affirm, because God can be trusted to keep his promises. And he can. We have a hope. We have a hope of salvation now. We have a hope that we are being saved, we're being transformed, and we have a hope of an eternity with Jesus. And if you're a Christian, it says in 1 Peter that you should be ready to share the hope that you have, the reason for the hope that you have. So there should be something different about you so that people can ask the question, why are you so hopeful in this situation when it looks like everything around you is crumbling? Why can you talk about a thrill of hope? Why can you talk about a new and glorious morning? Look what's going on with you. Be ready to have an answer for the reason for the hope that you have. And the reason is Jesus. Jesus makes all the difference in your life. And if you don't know Jesus, what is your hope in? What are you trusting in to get you through? Not just now, but in eternity. Where is your hope? This is what Paul says in Romans. Our salvation is nearer now than when we first believed. We've been saved. If Jesus is your Saviour, you are being saved, but there is an advent that we are waiting for, a coming, the second coming of Jesus, or the time that we will come to meet Jesus when our time on here on earth is finished. The night is nearly over. The day is almost here. Are you ready? Are you ready? Each new day with Jesus brings the help that you're seeking. Each new day with Jesus brings the hope to keep going. I'm going to invite the musicians up. We're going to sing this song. You probably wouldn't think of this as a Christmas song, but it really is. It talks about Jesus. It talks about Jesus, the light of the world, stepping down into darkness, into a dark, weary world, a tired, dark world. Open my eyes, let me see. Beauty that made this heart adore you. Hope of a life spent with you. And as we sing that, I'm going to invite you to come and pray. To come and pray. If you are looking for hope, if you are looking for help, if there's something in your life that you need an intervention beyond what people can do for you, something that only God for you, I invite you to come and pray, because God is a God of miracles. And I know that each new day, each new encounter with Jesus will give you the help that you're seeking. If you're looking for something, Jesus will give you the help. And if you're in the middle of something, he can also give you the hope to keep going. So as we sing, I invite you to come and pray.
Thank you for joining us today. We hope and pray that the service has been helpful to you. If you would like to know more, our service is on Sunday, 10 a.m. at the Caloundra Salvation Army, 119 Sugarbag Road, Little Mountain. God bless.